is 1 o'clock. This is Dr. Guarino. Let's call this meeting to order. And can I get a roll call, please?
Dr. Kolash?
Here.
Ms. Powell?
Present.
Dr. Knopf? Dr. Guarino?
Present. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so first item on our agenda is item letter C, motion for a rehearing. And,
Go ahead. I saw someone signing in, but it does not appear to be Dr. Shively.
Okay, so who is present at the board office right now? Anybody?
Michael Rain is present on behalf of the state. And I'm sorry, Mark Harris is here as well.
And Luis Bustamante is here from ADOA.
Okay, great. And so Dr. Shively is not present?
Not present.
He is not present on the board, no.
Not present. Not presently present.
No.
Okay. Okay, well, let's continue. So we have a request to for a motion for a rehearing, and it's my understanding that our counsel, attorney Michael Rain, suggests that we do not grant that.
Well, yes, and
I'm sure that.
Pardon me.
Go ahead.
This is Michael Rain again. Just to clarify that Mr. Harris is here to give you legal advice on this matter, but it is the state's position and its motion requesting that you deny the request.
Okay. Mr. Harris, do you have anything you'd like to say at this point?
I think not specifically. I'd just like to remind the board members that I believe that you have before you Dr. Shively's request for rehearing. Basically, your rules provide for seven basically reasons why you may grant a review or rehearing. He identifies three in particular in support of his motion. Then you have the state's response. And then yesterday, I believe, Dr. Shively submitted, in essence, his reply to the response. If you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to try to answer them. But if you have the motion, the response, and the reply, I think it pretty much sets forth the party's arguments.
We do. I have all those meeting materials in front of me. Okay. Board members, do you have any questions, or does anybody want to make a motion?
I have a question or comment. This is Angela Powell. It occurs to me that we really didn't mess up insofar as getting his address straight. We have the address on file. Everything that leads up to the point where we are today, the doctor had so much time, plenty of time, really, to respond. And in one instance, he was only concerned about contacting the board to see what the status of his license was and still had not provided a written response. My concern is that the doctors are starting to think that record keeping is just an unimportant part of practice when in fact, improperly created and or maintained, does pose a threat to the community. They should take it more seriously. And that's where I think this doctor's head was at. I don't see any evidence to support what he's saying that, you know, he didn't get subpoenas or he didn't get registered or certified mails when we've got them returned to us, received. He was issued a court subpoena, an arrest warrant, all of which he seemed to be knowledgeable, but these complaints he just blows off as if it were unimportant. That's disconcerting to me. I would like to be able to ask him why, but he's not present, so that's my comment.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Kolash. Do you have any comments or questions?
I do not.
Okay.
If you're looking for a motion, ready to do so.
Yeah, go ahead.
So this is Dr. Martin Kolash, and I move that we deny Dr. Shively's request. that at this point, but if you do, I have a couple of reasons.
I think that's fine for now. Do we have a second before we go into discussion?
I second the motion.
Okay, let's go ahead and discuss now. Dr. Kolash?
Reviewing the file, I agree with the counsel's interpretation and suggestions for moving forward, especially the word unregulatable. I like that as a term.
Okay.
Okay, and I agree, and I've been on the board for about 6 years or not, maybe seven, I don't know. And so I think I've been to every meeting except one, and so there have been multiple occasions that we've reached out to Dr. Shively, and he's either not showed up or said he was going to show up and didn't, and so that's brought us to where we are today. So I agree. I'm going to go ahead and call for a question to deny the request for a rehearing. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, any opposed? Okay, since we're on the phone, do we need to do a roll call vote?
Yes, if we can. Dr. Okay. Kolash?
Aye.
Ms. Powell?
Aye.
Dr. Knopf? And Dr. Guarino?
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have three ayes and one not present, so the motion carries and the request is denied. Let's move on to tab number two, in the matter of licensure.
Tab number two is licensure by examination. The following applicants have completed all requirements for licensure by examination: Kenneth Garvey and Tyler Travis.
Thank you. Is there a motion?
Move to grant licensure by examination for those spaces.
Okay, payment of the appropriate fees, and is there a second?
I second the motion.
Okay, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, licensure is granted. How about tab number three?
Tab number three is licensure by endorsement. Donald Blair, D.C., has completed all requirements for licensure by endorsement from the state of Montana. Dr. Blair has been licensed in the state of Montana since 2002 and has no disciplinary action.
Okay. Is there a motion?
I make a motion to grant license upon proper payment of all fees.
Okay. Those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? Okay. Hearing none, we'll move on to tab number four for certification.
Tab number four, the following applicants have completed all requirements for physical medicine modalities and therapeutic procedure certification: Kenneth Garvey, D.C., Tyler Travis, D.C., and Donald Blair, D.C.
Okay.
Motion to grant all licenses upon payment of proper fees.
Okay, so this is a matter of certification, not licensure.
Okay.
Physical medicine modalities and therapeutic procedures. Is there a second? Okay. Those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Hearing none, we'll move on to tab number four for board business. Tab number five is to review, discuss, and have possible action regarding appointment of an interim executive director. I had some conversations with our attorney, Michael Rain, and also with Mr. Bustamante from the Arizona Department of Administration, and I totally appreciate the help with that. I know we were a little bit confused about what had happened, I've been informed that, you know, when our executive director from the past, Justin Bohal, signed on with a letter of intent for the osteopathic board, that normally that comes with a letter of resignation. And so some concern was brought up that, you know, perhaps our deputy director, you know, should be appointed or hired as an interim executive director for up to 6 months. so that she can sign off on everything that Justin signed off on, and we can make some decisions in the future about employment. And so those, you know, decisions could include all of the things that we're going to talk about in tab number six. And so does anybody want to weigh in on that? Mr. Bustamante, I appreciate you joining, and, you know, if you have anything additional you want to say at this point, you can.
Oh, hello. Well, as far as adding anything additional on the email that I sent out on May 2nd, that's if your request is to go ahead and assign the deputy director as the interim, we can go right ahead and do that. There's a few forms that I'm going to need just to be filled, for you to fill out, but we can, assuming that I get them sometime this week, we can make the pay retroactive to whenever Lindsay or whoever takes over the interim director position.
Okay.
And this is Michael. I was just curious, do you need a specific authority person, you know, the chairman or the staff to be able to sign forms or submit them?
So the chairman of the board has to be the one responsible for signing the letters. I mean, anyone can fill them out as long as I have the signature in them.
Okay.
Okay, and so I think that's a wise move and will buy us, you know, up to 6 months of time to decide what our next move will be. And I did speak to Ms. Castro, who said that she was willing to assume the position of an interim executive director. And so I appreciate that. So board members, do you have any questions for regarding the process at this point?
Just real quick, this is Angela Powell. At the end of 6 months, then we would review and Lindsay would decide both if she would want to continue in that position or if we needed to hire someone to fill that position, correct?
Yes, it's my understanding that it's a temporary agreement, and then at that point we would consider, you know, or at any point in the next 6 months, we can consider her, Dr. Kolash, anybody else who has expressed interest in becoming our next executive director. So,
okay.
But it's up to 6 months.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, for some reason I was disconnected there for a few seconds, but I think I got the gist of it there in your last sentence, Dr. Guarino. And if the conversation was about the appointing Ms. Castro for the intern, I agree, and I think that's where you were. So sorry for the interruption.
Right. No, that's fine. And I appreciate you weighing in if you didn't hear everything we said. I just, you know, this would enable our board to continue to function as it did before and administratively, and give us a little bit of time to decide, you know, what we're going to do from here, if we want to do a direct hire or if we want to post the job, you know, and interview candidates, et cetera. Would anyone like to make a motion to appoint Ms. Castro as our next interim executive director for up to 6 months?
Yes. Okay.
Dr. Kolash has made the motion, and is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
Okay. Any further discussion on this point? Okay, hearing that, I'm going to call for the question. Go ahead. What did you say?
I was just going to thank Ms. Castro for her willingness to step in and help us out.
Yes.
Thank you for talking to him, I should say.
Thank you for all
Absolutely.
Of
Absolutely. Okay, so I'm going to call for the question to appoint her as our interim executive director for the next 6 months. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the three ayes have it. And so she will be receiving a little bit of a salary bump while she's assuming this role and more responsibility.
I'm sorry, point of clarification, and that's retroactive to the last meeting?
I believe Mr. Bustamante said it could be.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
It could become retroactive as soon as of today. I mean, assuming when Ms. Castro took over or is taking over the position of interim director. And I say retroactive because by the time I get the documents that I need and by the time my director signs on, I could be a little, you know, it could happen, let's say, next week or so. But assuming that she takes over as of now, we'll make it retroactive to the day that she's taking over.
So it'll be retroactive to the present?
Yes.
Just kidding. Kidding.
Okay. In the future.
Okay. So that brings us to agenda item number 6. And so, you know, in my conversations and per the emails that I've received from Mr. Bustamante from the Arizona Department of Administration back on May 2nd, you know, the options are, you know, to do a direct hire or to, you know, kind of have an open call to submit a, you know, a request for to the public for application. And so during that time, you know, I spoke to Dr. Kolash, who was gracious enough to say that he would strongly consider, you know, resigning as one of our board members, and if the board would, at the board's pleasure, he would assume the executive director's position. Since then, he did speak to his wife, and she gave him the green light, and so he's fully committed to that. So I think we need to discuss that. Although I don't think we'll be taking any action on that today because he would have to recuse himself, and Dr. Knopf's not here. So I want to talk about that, but also in the meantime, I spoke to Ms. Castro, who said that, you know, she would definitely like to be considered for the position as well, and you know, as an insider, I like both of those options. You know, she understands the continuity of the board, and I know that word gets out about these things, and there's a lot of other people who probably will be putting their name forward. And so that's where we're at right now. And so I would like to open up the floor to anybody who wants to comment on any of these decisions we're considering.
I think we're extremely lucky to have such qualified candidates. Remarkable, really, two people willing to assume the job. So, while I would encourage continuing to take whatever applications are submitted, I'm delighted to know that we have these two people to consider.
Yeah, and I agree. You know, Ms. Castro has been, you know, in the position and is our insider who understands the processes and can make it a seamless transmission for us. You know, on the other hand, Dr. Kolash, you know, has vast experience with the National Board of Chiropractic Examiners, you know, having worked there for, I think, 15 to 20 years. Most recently in a capacity as an executive vice president where he was involved in a budgeting process for a $30 million company, and, you know, staff and et cetera. So I think we have, at a minimum, two very highly, you know, qualified people that could step in and do a great job. And so, you know, I'm trying to do the right thing, and the right thing is not always the easy thing. So I'm wondering, do we take it the next step and do a public posting just to do our due diligence and consider anybody who might like to step into the position and what their qualifications might be? And, you know, as far as our 6-month timeline, there's a lot that's going to happen in the next couple of months. You know, Dr. Kolash will either be reappointed or not reappointed if we wait that long. You know, I believe his appointment is up in June. I know people are already submitting applications, you know, to get his position on the board, or and so, you know, I don't know how important that is to consider right now, you know, but I just wanted to get the discussion going about what we're going to do from here, and so I think the most important discussion, you know, that we could have today is to either to take action today, whether we're going to post the position, or do we want to wait a month or two and see how things are going with Ms. Castro as our interim executive director, get a feel for how well she likes the position or not, and then make a decision whether we want to do a direct hire between our top two candidates already, or at that point we might feel a need to get the application process going, and if people change their minds, et cetera, and decide they don't want to do the job, then we would have still several months to do our interviews and do our due diligence and pick from our top candidates at that point. So, as your chairman, I want to direct the conversation and lay all the options out there, but I'll tell you, I did speak candidly to, or communicated with Dr. Knopf, and I did tell him that Dr. Kolash was interested in the position, and he said that he would support that if that were the case, and so he's not here to weigh in, but I did have a little bit of communication with him through voicemail, et cetera. We didn't speak directly, so that's that. So at this point, I'll stop talking and open up the floor to anybody who wants to continue the discussion.
Go ahead,
Angela. It's just a question. Not having experience in hiring in government positions, how long is this process? How many applicants would you anticipate? I realize that we can't anticipate really, but generally speaking, do we receive a lot of applications for these jobs? Are there very few and far between people who are qualified for this type of job? What could we expect possibly? That would determine in my mind whether we should start the process of looking at additional applicants now or later, because of the many variables involved in this right now. Any comments or anyone help me with that?
I think that the number of applicants would actually depend on how long you chose to leave the listing open. You could choose to leave it for a week or longer. Typically in the past, when we have been selecting candidates for other staff positions, we leave it open for about a week and we receive about 30 to 50 applications for a position.
So that would tend to make me think we should wait a couple of months, see if Lindsay is comfortable in the job, wants to continue in the job, and that gives us plenty of time still if we need to go out and start if we do need to receive applications. I think that's plenty of time then. I wasn't sure if it's a six-month process of collecting these types of applications. I didn't really know, so that helps me. I think I would be in favor of waiting to do that.
Well, if I may, this is Luis, by the way. The recruitment process takes about 45 days from the time it gets posted to, in average, to the time that I hire someone into the position. You as the board, you can decide if you want the position to be live or be active for 3 days, 5 days, a week. And an average for an executive director, I'm looking for anywhere between 1 to 2 weeks. Regardless of how many people apply for the position, I'll be the first one to look at resumes, and I'm only going to forward those resumes that actually qualify for the position. From there, you guys get to pick and choose how many you really want to bring over to interview. For executive directors, we're looking at a minimum of 5, assuming that those actually qualify, and each interview, a minimum of 30 to 45 minutes. I've seen some that go up to an hour. But that's something I'm going to leave up to you. So just so that you know, we're looking at an average of 45 days.
All right. Thank you. That's very helpful. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ms. Powell, do you have any further comments?
Nope, that's it.
Okay, Dr. Kolasch, you have something to say?
Chairman, this is Michael Rennie. I want to interject just to make sure we cover the other basis, which is the direct hire process. They have a couple candidates already, but how can you just explain how that process would work in terms of people submitting their interest? Where would they submit it to? Where would they log those, for later reviewing them?
Okay. If we go through the direct hire process or private interviews, like I mentioned on my email last time, depending on how many people you have, I don't have to open the position for competition. You can just forward those resumes to me. I can keep them. I can safeguard them for however long it takes. This is assuming that you want to interview any of those two or three candidates that you had mentioned, Chairman. And as far as the requirement goes, there was one on the email that was sent out on May 2nd. I included all of the requirements that I need to go ahead and do a direct hire, assuming that you already have identified someone for that position.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the last part of what you said. You said if we do choose to do a direct hire, and I'm looking at the email right now, so you're saying that I've got all the forms for them to fill out and submit that information.
Right. So if you do this as a direct hire, we don't have to post the position for competition. We don't have to spend those 7-15 days that goes live on the website. We can do a private interview for however many people you choose. This is assuming that we don't want to keep it open for everyone to apply. On the email where you said, where you began saying that I need the application part one and part two, and there's a resume that's a justification as to why we're doing a direct hire. And once I get all that packet, it has to come to ADOA for review. It comes to me, I'll do the first screening, I will forward to my hiring manager, and so on up the chain of command. And it will go to the governance office just for them to make sure that everything's fine with it, and they will let me know if everything's good to go.
Okay, so just to be clear, so you're looking, if we do a direct hire, you're looking for me to, as the chairman, to submit all of these documents to you. Is that correct?
Yes, or Ms. Castro can help you out. There's only a couple of forms that require signature.
Okay.
And
thank you.
Michael Rennie again. When you say private interview, can you describe that for them versus more like in a board meeting interview?
Okay. So I've been to different recruitments for executive directors here in this 1740 building. Private interview will be just as a regular recruitment interview where you have all board members who will not be participating as an interviewee. All of you will be together. The Assistant Attorney General will be here. I will be here to make sure that we don't ask any inappropriate questions, or to make sure that we all ask the same questions for every single candidate that we have. By private, I mean we don't actually post the position on the website for other people to see. It's just to reduce the number of candidates that you as the board members will be reviewing.
Okay. All right, and then Ms. Castro, this is your time to chime in if you have anything additionally you'd like to say, or and you don't have to say anything if you don't want to, but it's up to you.
I don't have anything additional. I guess all that I would say is if you did choose to post the position publicly, you would still be able to. The two candidates that you're speaking about could apply that way as well, and you could compare them to other applicants, so it would give you more options. That's just one option
that
you have.
All right, very good. So at this point, I don't know if it's necessary, but if it's appropriate, I think I would like to made a committee to review applications to consist of myself and Ms. Powell. And then that way we will be in good position if we choose to do a public posting for the job and start to get the application process going to consider other people for the job. So can I just self-direct that, or do we need to vote as a body, or how does that work?
Well, yeah, I mean, and it's probably best to vote. The chair has some authority, but if you vote on it, there's no problem, and assuming it's a vote that passes. But I don't see that there's an issue. I would just note that you know, Mr. Kolach's desired interest, you know, is not really materialized yet because there is no posting and he's not really in the process. So I would just defer to him whether he thinks he can vote on any matter about the process that the board would entertain without a conflict.
Okay, Dan, thank you for that, because I was concerned about whether I needed to recuse myself. And one of the things I think I'd like to clear up is if the board moves forward, is it kind of a parallel process that I was hearing with the internal hire versus the job posting? They might move forward with just reviewing the internal candidate, and then if there's still some question, they move forward with the posting, or are those things mutually exclusive?
What I understood was you could do either one. I mean, I imagine, Mr. Buscemonte, if you post it, then the all interested applicants could just apply. Even if you had a couple candidates that you knew already existed, they would still show up potentially, except that Mr. Buscemonte does act as a gatekeeper for minimum qualifications. So if one of your two, you know, known entities didn't make it through Mr. Buscemonte, then maybe they wouldn't make it. Is that accurate?
Right. So if we only interviewed those two or three individuals that you mentioned, I will not recommend posting it live on the website, because if we post it live, it has to be competitive, meaning that those individuals have to apply through AC State Jobs to be considered for the position. We cannot do a direct hire once the position was live. Now, you as the board, you have the authority to appoint someone to the position, which is a direct hire. So we have to choose either or. If you decide just to interview those two or three individuals privately, we can go ahead. But if you want to explore other options and see and compare them to other applicants as well, then I would recommend keeping it open for competition.
Could they go through the direct hire, have an interview or a discussion in a meeting with the two candidates, and then determine, let's say, hey, after these interviews, we decide who we should open it up?
Yes.
Could they do it in that order, at least?
Yeah, they can do that like that first.
And then, again, I just returned to Dr. Kolach. I just want to finish the thought, which is that, you know, to the extent you're uncomfortable with any conflict, I mean, you do have an interim director now. You may want to consider the board members mulling over your options and taking a vote on the process once Dr. Kanoff is available.
Exactly. So my position is that I would have a biased opinion about how we move forward with internal versus external, obviously. In the previous board meeting, I said we should move expeditiously, but I can just, that opinion stands, but how the board wants to move forward, I'm going to recuse myself from a discussion like that.
Yeah, and I'll just remind the board, it's the 22nd, right?
That is correct.
So we're not terribly far, you know, a couple weeks before you have your next regularly scheduled meeting, where, you know, we hope to have Dr. Kanoff and Board Member Powell and Chairman Guarino all present, so then you could vote at that time without any conflict worries. And that would give you a couple of weeks to think about it, and also a couple of weeks for your interim director to perform her duties and see how that's working.
Okay. I guess what I would like, you know, the tricky part of this is, you know, we have four board members, and you know, if one recuses himself because he's a candidate, and if the other one, you know, has a schedule conflict for our next meeting on the 22nd, then we're right back where we started. And so, I guess I would just like to direct Ms. Castro to try to poll everybody and make sure that we know everybody's going to be at that telephonic meeting on the 22nd, and if not, then we can schedule another meeting where we can all be together.
Okay. I can do that.
So, and just, I brought that issue up, Dr. Garino, because you had started the process of doing the committee, and I think under all those circumstances, I'd just recommend we defer that to when we have full a quorum able to vote.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, is there any further discussion for tab number 6? Okay, then let's go on to letter G, the call to the public, if anybody has joined.
Dr. Reno,
which I don't think they're,
Mr. Rain,
yeah.
Dr. Shibley did appear while we were having our discussion on the last
okay.
tabs. He has subsequently stepped out of the room, but his bag's here. He's still here. So I intended to have you call that matter up again. And I don't want to say more until he's in the room, since I'm an opposing party and your independent advisor is no longer in the room, Mr. Harris. So I have tried to make contact with Mr. Harris, but as of yet, I haven't reached him. So I'll stop there, and we're going to get Mr. Shively, from the hallway, and we'll take it from there.
Okay.
So he's going to be permitted to speak?
Yeah.
Okay, Dr. Shively is now, has signed in, and is in the room.
Hi, Dr. Shively. It's Dr. Garino, Chairman of the Board. How are you?
Good, thank you. Yourself?
Good. Can you please state your name for the record?
Troy David Shively.
Thanks. So we are in receipt of your request to rehear your case, and you know, we had decided that we had voted and decided to not rehear your case. Do you have anything that you want to say? We have read all the materials. We've read your letter requesting, and we had made that decision. So do you have anything that you would like to say?
I don't really understand. You're like, recently you read my stuff, and
yeah.
Oh, you already voted not to rehear it?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, I was under the impression that today was to discuss to rehear it or not.
Well, we started the meeting at 1 p.m. Apparently before you showed up, and thought that you were not attending, and so you were the first item on our agenda, and so we had already dealt with it. But since you're here, we're giving you the opportunity to speak, and my board members might have some questions for you. And I'll be happy to entertain that, but I'm giving you an opportunity to speak at this point if there's anything you want to clarify. And we've read your letter, and so we understand that you had this, I guess you thought there was an address change and you were not properly notified.
I tried to explain it as best as I could in that recent letter. So, and as far as starting at 1, I apologize. I was down. I was here before 1. I got stuck at security. So
okay.
I'm not really sure what that was all about. But.
And Chairman Reno, it's Michael Ring. I did get a message that your advice attorney's on the way.
Okay. So we'll wait. We'll wait for him to
within 5 minutes. I don't know if you want to take a 5-minute recess. or not, but I just, he should be here momentarily. And just for Dr. Shapley's benefit, I'm normally the attorney for the board, but when we prosecute the case, then I sit there typically, and they get a different attorney to give them independent advice. He was here earlier, but he's left, so we're hoping he can return so that they can get legal advice if they need it.
Okay.
And you may, he may have some instruction for you on how to reopen the matter since you already took action.
Okay. That's fine. We'll wait for him to attend then.
Okay, should be. Dr. Cole, I just have a question for procedure. Is this a hearing where the parties will be sworn?
I'm sorry. I didn't hear you. This is my
question. I don't believe so.
Okay. Yeah, I just didn't know if this was the type of hearing where the witnesses or the speakers would be sworn in.
No.
It is not.
Okay, thank you.
So, okay.
Hi, Mr. Harris in the room now?
Yes, he is now present.
Sorry about that.
Hi.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for making your way back. So I had informed Dr. Shively that we had already heard his motion to, or his request to rehear the case, and we had decided not to as a board before he came, but since he's here, we wanted to give him the chance to speak, and so if you have any counsel for us at this point, you know, now is your time to let us know how we can proceed that way.
No, thank you so much, and I'm in complete agreement with you. Since Dr. Shively is here, if you'd like to hear from him, you're more than welcome to do so. And then if you think that anything he has said requires you to change your prior action, we can walk through those steps at that time. I would just ask the board that once they hear from Dr. Shively, that they do give the state an opportunity to respond.
Okay. Thank you very much. Dr. Shively, I totally appreciate you, you know, attending today and having the chance to speak with you. And I'll tell you, you know, over the last couple of years, you know, there's been a lot of frustration, as I've said in on board meetings, that we thought you were going to be at that you weren't at. And you know, even most recently, when we decided to revoke your license, you know, you were notified, and there were conversations over the phone where people directly spoke to you, and you still chose to not attend the hearing where we took action to revoke your license. And so, as I read through your letter, it was a little frustrating for me, you know, that we've attempted to, resolve your cases and with your input over the last couple of years, and just, you know, repeatedly it seemed like you had no desire to show up until your license was actually revoked, and now you come before us. And so what do you say to that?
Did you get the letter that I sent yesterday?
Yes.
Okay, again, that's where I was trying to explain it all. It's hard to defend myself when I don't get notified of the meetings. I mean, I don't know how else I can.
Well, we have proof that you were notified of several meetings that you chose not to attend.
Well, I never received notification at all beforehand. I received it afterwards. As I explained in that letter, the certified mail, everything was sent to the wrong address. So I don't know how you can say that I was notified, because I wasn't.
Okay, so we have a long trail of attempts to notify you and actual conversations with you where you knew of meetings that you just didn't show up to, and eventually it led to your license being revoked. And so I read your letter, but it doesn't seem completely factual compared to all the other things that have happened with our board. So that's where we're at today.
With all due respect, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Go ahead.
With all due respect, I mean, I would like to try and decipher the proof that you have, because I addressed that in my response to Mr. Raines' response to my motion for hearing, and there's just, I don't know how you could have proof of that. I mean, sure, there's proof that you guys sent certified letters and things to my old address, but how could I even be aware of those? And as far as the conversations, I had one conversation with Jackie Canal, and that was it. I mean, there was no board meeting scheduled at that time. So I don't know, I just want to go through your proof if that's possible.
Okay, board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Shively?
I did have a question for Dr. Shively. This is D'Angelo Powell. We have return receipts signed by you. This starts in 2016, and there's the 2017. Your address changed when, Doctor, exactly?
March. Between January and March of 2000 and,
well, it kind of matters.
Yeah, exactly. It would be 18, because it's confusing because it's right at the end of the year and I want to get the numbers right. So in 2018, when I stopped practicing, or when my license was suspended, obviously I wasn't going to the office. So that's when it was changed.
Okay, again, the date that you moved, the date of your change of address is what?
The date of my which?
Your address change. When did your address change?
January 2018.
December 2018?
January of 2018.
January of 2018. Okay. Prior to that, when you had received subpoenas from the court and even issued an arrest warrant, still you didn't comply. And in the middle of all that time, you're getting requests from the board. So why ignore those? You're getting some and not getting others? And when you realized that there was an arrest warrant, then you complied by submitting some of the records, or deficient records, as it turns out, records with billing discrepancies, etc.
What?
That's what's so confusing. You're saying you're not getting them, but you had to have gotten them, because at certain times you comply.
No, ma'am. That's not correct. I never remember. When did I get a arrest warrant? I've never heard of that.
And Board Member Paul, this is Mr. Ray. That the arrest warrant and the I think you're referring to some matters that happened in some civil litigation that didn't involve the board, but was part of the board's investigation.
Right.
That was all sent to my home address.
It just goes to confirm that your address, you were receiving notifications. Even if it wasn't board notifications, other notifications, the argument that your address, that you didn't receive anything at your address, that we had your correct address and we intentionally sent it to the wrong address or inadvertently sent it to the wrong address.
No, ma'am.
Doesn't make sense.
Okay, that's really easy to clarify. The civil litigation things were sent to my correct address. Your things were not sent to the correct address.
What is the correct address?
9393 East Palo Brea. It's on my license renewal form. And you guys
as of December 2018.
Yeah. I received everything before 2018.
Okay, so prior to that, your address was on Shea Boulevard, correct?
Correct.
So notices were sent to the Shea address.
And I didn't, if you can show me one that went to my Shea address that I received, I would like to see that, because I didn't receive any there.
And you're denying ever having any phone conversations with our staff regarding this prior to that as well?
I just explained that. I spoke to Jackie Canal one time in October of 2018. And at that time, she did not have any dates as far as when I would be heard.
Why didn't you comply and send the records to the patients when they asked for them initially?
Well, we're not, I don't think we're here to discuss that right now. I thought we were discussing the motion to rehear.
We are here to discuss it.
I thought we were just here to discuss whether we're going to rehearing or not.
What was the reason for denying access to those records? Or not submitting, not submitting to the patients, not providing them the records, which they're legally entitled to.
And Ms. Powell, members of the board, this is Mark Harris. I would agree with Dr. Scheibel in the regard that the only issue before you is whether or not to grant his motion for rehearing or review. It's not to go into the underlying case at this time. And if I may, it's my understanding from reading the pleadings that there's, in essence, three reasons why Dr. Shibley is requesting the board grant his motion. The first has to do with service, and there's been some questions and answers on that. And then the other two reasons is that he felt that the penalty, the order of revocation, wasn't justified based upon the board's findings. And then with respect to the findings, that they were not supported by the evidence. And so what I would ask is that you consider addressing Dr. Shibley and any questions that you may have with respect to those areas of why he thinks he's entitled to a rehearing.
Well, I think we've heard why he thinks he's entitled to a rehearing.
Yeah, and you may have no further questions for him.
Can I say something? Okay.
I would refer to Dr. Guarino.
Okay, sorry.
Go ahead. We're across the phone, so I can't make eye contact with you. Is there somebody that had a question to Dr. Shibley?
As far as the penalties and excessive penalties revoking, I would say 90% of my reason for a rehearing is the fact that I wasn't notified. I would never have missed a board meeting. I mean, in the past I never have. So I'm just saying, please, please understand the fact that I did not know about those meetings. And I don't know if Ms. Cannell is here, but when I found out that you guys had met and I didn't get notified, I mean, I was speechless. I didn't even know what to say. I mean,
well, so that's your testimony right now, and I recall very recently, prior to our last board meeting, where we had a very serious matter of revoking your license or not, board staff did contact you, and I also believe there was an email that went to you. If staff wants to confirm that, I'd like you to chime in now.
I'm looking to see if I can confirm that with the documentation that I have available right now.
And I recall Mr. Bohol, our executive director at the time, saying, you know, that they had a conversation with you, and I was hopeful that you were going to show up and with either representation or by yourself so that we could handle your cases fairly. And then there again, you didn't show up. And that was just the most recent of a couple of years of this kind of thing happening. And so it's very frustrating for us to have you agendized and never show up. And I hear what you're saying, but I don't know that I believe you at this point, because we've been through this with you over and over and over again to the point where we had to revoke your license because you weren't showing up.
Imagine how frustrating it is to me knowing that I can't even defend myself. If I don't know about the meetings until afterwards.
Okay. So are you saying that you did not have any conversations with my board staff in the month prior to the most recent meeting?
Again, Your Honor, I'm not really sure what to call you, Doctor, but I had, again, one conversation through all of this in the whole 2 or 3 years with Ms. Cannell, and that was it. I didn't talk to anybody else about this, especially between now and Ms. Cannell and I spoke immediately after the October board meeting when she informed me, and that was it. I have no reason to lie. I mean, I want to explain myself to you guys. I've been waiting. I don't know. It's really frustrating. But I'm telling you, if you guys can find proof or, I don't even need proof. I would like to know when I had notification of the meeting that I could, you know, even if it was a day before I would have been here. I just flew in last night to come to this meeting. I did not know about any of those meetings or hearings beforehand, honestly.
Dr. Guarino, members of the board, if you have no further questions of Dr. Shively, you may want to hear from the state at this point, in particular about service.
This is Dr. Kolasch, and I just thought I'd chime in with the fact that I have before me and the testimony that I just heard are not. So the fact is we mailed something in the middle of December. He did not change his address until the end of December. So his address of record is a fact, and we send it to the correct address.
Wrong years.
Mr. Harris?
Yes?
You said that you had something to say?
I was just, if you have no further questions, Dr. Shively, you may want to hear from the state and the state's position with respect to notice. As Dr. Okay. Shively indicated, it's about 90%, I believe he said, of the basis for requesting the motion for rehearing or review. He believes, again, just to summarize, that the reasons why he did not attend the hearing was because he was not properly noticed. And so you might want to hear from the state with respect to the notification that occurred.
And Dr. Guarino, I have looked through the complaint files that I have, and I see multiple notices that were sent to the Shea Boulevard address as certified mail, and those were returned to the office. But I've confirmed that that is the address of record. The secondary address is the address that Dr. Shively is saying is his correct address as of now. And we have sent notices to that address of this meeting. But I would like to point out that in September of 2017, we sent a notice to the Shea Boulevard address notifying him of the complaint, and it does not appear that that was returned, and that address was correct at the time. So Dr. Shively was aware of the complaint and as of today has not responded to them.
I'm not denying that. I mean, I knew the complaints, all the notification. I never was notified of the hearings. And in September, that was my right address, the Shea Boulevard. But as of, do you have my renewal?
I do not have your renewal.
Okay, it's changed on there.
Okay, your renewal was returned to you, and staff notified you that they would not process it because you had not responded to the complaints.
That's not correct, I'm sorry. And it's in the computer because Jackie Cannell, when we had our discussion in October, she pulled it up, just like I said in my letter, it was there.
I understand. It is your secondary address. It is not your address of record. That is the public mailing address. So we do have both, yes.
Chairman Guarino, this is Michael Rain. I'll be somewhat brief. We outlined in the state's motion the various communications that I was made aware of in consultation with your former chairman, Bo Hall. I emailed with him. We went communication by communication, and so at least from the state's perspective, the facts as laid out in the state's motion were confirmed with board staff, not in passing, but in a series of email exchanges where we confirmed is this true? Is this how it was? And so we stand by that at least as it came from staff. and they have a different version of the facts, the staff does, including Dr. Bohol, former Director Bohol discussing emailing the complaint at Dr. Shibley's request. Now, he says he doesn't receive it. You know, there's no indication from the board that it was undeliverable. And I think largely another overarching point is that what you hear from Dr. Shibel is that he filed a renewal with a different address, which isn't a change of address. The board can process it as such, or at least take notice of it. But I haven't seen him say, or his writing say, I ever changed my address officially with the board. And maybe he called the board and confirmed that they had notice of his new address, but he didn't ever say that he submitted a change of address form. So, you know, the board sends its notice to the address of record, and it's up to the licensee by law, not just as good practice, but the law requires licensees to update their address with the board. The law on notice is effectively, at least this is what I would argue to you, is that it is whether you have reasonably attempted to provide someone with notice under all the circumstances. If you know your notices are bad, of course you should try to do more. But I think from the board's perspective, they didn't know their notice was bad. There was no change of address. They had reached Dr. Shibley with effective mail, in this case at the Shea address. Phone calls were had, according to them, that would have made him aware of the complaint, and an email was made that would have made him aware of the complaint. So we think from the state's perspective that they've satisfied that burden of providing notice reasonably calculated to reach the doctor. And I do want to just make another note that to the extent you're inclined to provide him with a further hearing, that in lieu of that, that you also consider, you know, vacating the hearing and returning the matter to an investigative stage, because as you well know from this discussion and past interactions, is that the matter could never get off the ground, because while Dr. Shibley was made aware of the complaint, which he's acknowledged here today, he hasn't responded to the subpoenas. He hasn't, you know, there's been no real opportunity to investigate the matter either. So I just want to remind you of that, that we went to the hearing almost as a, what else, you know, what else could we do? There was no communication coming back. But in lieu of a potential hearing, we would recommend that we consider, you know, going back down to the investigative stage if at this meeting, or maybe to be considered at a future meeting. But I just remind you of that there was more work to be done in investigating it as well. Thank you.
Okay, and so you know, we've taken action and we have voted to deny the rehearing request. Another option would be that he could reapply for his license, correct? And then at that point, we would consider the open complaints against him, and how would that work? If he's sincere and he wants to maintain his license and he wants to practice, and, you know, is that an option for him?
I think that's probably a question for me. And if you'd like, I'd be more than happy. Perhaps we can go into executive session for legal advice.
Okay. Board members, someone want to make a
motion? I mean, can I address what he said?
Dr. Colwatt, I'm going to go into executive session for legal advice.
Okay, is there a second?
Second motion.
Okay. Okay, so thanks for your patience while we got some legal counsel. So, you know, I think that we understand each other a little bit better as we spoke, again, we've already made a motion, and so I'm going to ask my board members if anybody wants to make another motion, or if Dr. Shibley, before we decide what we're going to do at this point, is there anything that you want to say briefly to clarify what we think we already know?
Yes, and again, I'm going to try and organize this. My thoughts are just swirling right now. I just never thought it would go like this. But the letter, I was just talking to attorney Mr. Raines outside. It's the letter that I wrote was trying to respond to all those things that he just mentioned. And it's not, in my opinion, it's not that I'm, you know, he said, she said with any of the board members or any of the communication that I had, because I'm not calling anybody a liar or anything. It's just, I'm just trying to show that I just didn't know about these things. I mean, if you look at my history, I've never missed a board meeting that I was asked to come to. All I'm saying is, I just didn't receive notification. If I would have had the notification, I mean, I would have been here, no question about it. And Ms. Castro, talking about, you know, the first or primary and secondary addresses, I tried to fill out a change of address form, but was told that it was not necessary because of my renewal. And the renewal, if it was returned to me, it was still, I mean, it was done by computer, so it was still in your system. I don't know what the rule is about doing a change of address. I mean, do you have to do a change of address if you do it on your renewal form at the same time? My address changed. Actually, didn't change. It went from secondary. I just moved my home address to my office address because my license was suspended, so I wasn't going to the office. And that was all in my renewal form. So I don't even know if at that point I was supposed to do a change of address or not.
Okay, well, if your renewal was not accepted and it was returned to you, then we would not have updated your address because your application was not processed. And so you understand now that anytime you change address, you have to do it quickly. And in the spirit of communication, if one of my board members decides that they want to make a motion to give you a second chance on this, I think what I'm hearing from you is that you would take it very seriously and that you would be at all of the future meetings to defend yourself with or without counsel on the other cases that you had before you. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. I mean, I have in the past for 25 years.
Okay. What's your pleasure, board members? Anybody want to make a motion?
So we need to make the motion to vacate and then reschedule, or just vacate?
And it would include, it would be contingent on him submitting a change of address form and updating his contact information and providing written responses to the two complaints, and then providing copies of all the previously subpoenaed patient records for patients SH and AT.
Yeah, and
that would have to be done quickly within a couple of weeks.
Within 10 days would be reasonable. So I will make the motion to give the doctor a second chance, provided he fills out the application for change of address, provides us with all the records timely regarding the past cases, like timely being within 10 days from working days. Is that reasonable?
And Dr. Guarino, members of the board, Ms. Powell, I think it might be easier if we took it, if we kind of broke up that into several motions, and maybe the first motion that you could consider is whether or not to move to rescind your prior motion to deny Dr. Shibley's motion for review or rehearing.
This is Dr. Colak, and I made the original motion, so I'll move to vacate the revocation for the purpose of further discussion.
Okay. I'll second the motion.
I think the motion was to deny the request for a rehearing, and so that's what your motion needs to reverse.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Yeah.
So it would be to rescind that motion.
Okay. Is there a second?
A second.
And can we do a roll call, please?
Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And if we could do a roll call vote, Dr. Kolash?
Aye.
Ms. Powell?
Aye.
Dr. Knuth? And Dr. Guarino?
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay, so the motion carries, and so now, does anybody want to make a motion to, so would that be a motion to grant rehearing?
No, my understanding is that you're going to, you may want to follow the state's recommendation, and that is to vacate the hearing and remand it back to investigations with the requirements that Dr. Shibley, and I heard 10 days, but you're free to give him whatever time you think is appropriate, but within a certain specific period of time to submit a change of address form, provide written responses to the two complaints, and to provide copies of all previously requested patient records for SH and AT. So basically what we're going to be doing is vacating the hearing and in essence returning this to investigations with the following three conditions.
Okay.
I have a question with Dr. Colas. Is Dr. Shelby's license still suspended?
This one? Yeah.
If we remove the revocation,
it was previously administratively suspended, was the status. So it would return to administratively suspended.
But it can be reinstated with a fine.
No, not at this point. I mean, we're going back to the investigative phase, correct?
Okay.
So he will remain on administrative suspension until we work through his cases.
Okay.
I think that's correct.
And then
at some point you'd probably have to address the renewal of his license because is that the basis for his administrative suspension?
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. So we need a motion for that. Or you can.
Okay. I'll make a motion to vacate the hearing and remand to investigation. The doctor should provide records previously requested all within 2 weeks. Copies of all records provided on SH and AT and his responses to the complaint.
And submit a change of address form.
Excuse me, and also submit a change of address form, which should take place immediately.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Thank you.
Okay, hearing none, I'll call for the question. We'll do a roll call vote.
Dr. Colash?
Aye.
Ms. Powell?
Aye.
Dr. Knuth and Dr. Guarino.
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay, so the motion carries, and Dr. Shively, you can contact board staff. They'll be letting you know what we've decided and what the next steps are, and I'm sure you've heard it too. So that concludes your case with us today. Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Okay. Okay, so finally, letter G is a call to the public. If anybody is present at the meeting and wants to speak to the board, you can say whatever you like. We just can't reply to you. Is anyone there to step up?
There's no one else present.
Okay. Take a motion to adjourn.
Make a motion to adjourn.
Second. Okay, those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Hearing none, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much for attending.
Thank you.
Thank you.